Welcome back, everybody, to the Deep Dive. As you know, we love to unpack these complicated topics, and today, well, we're diving into the Second Amendment.
Ooh.
Big one.
Yeah.
Specifically, how the courts are interpreting it after that landmark Supreme Court decision in Bruin.
Right.
Our guide for this deep dive is an article called Dangerous But Not Unusual: Mistakes Commonly Made by Courts in Post-Bruin Litigation.
Okay.
It's by legal scholar Mark W. Smith.
Gotcha.
What's really interesting here, and what we're going to try to unpack today,
Yeah.
is not just the legal arguments themselves, but how historical parallels are being used and sometimes misused.
Yeah, it's a really dynamic area of law right now. You know, lower courts are really trying to suss out, you know, how to apply this new
It's
precedent.
like a whole new game,
Yeah.
and everyone's trying to figure out the rule.
Exactly.
So to understand where we are now, we need to rewind a little bit.
Okay.
So remember the Heller case back in 2008? That's when the Supreme Court said, yes, the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to own a gun, especially for self-defense at home.
Yeah, Heller was a landmark case.
Huge.
And then Bruin comes along in 2022 and adds a whole other layer to it.
Oh, yeah.
Bruin kind of built on Heller, but said any gun regulations have to be consistent with the historical tradition of gun control in America.
So courts are basically playing historical detective,
Exactly.
like looking back hundreds of years,
Yeah.
trying to compare laws from way back then to what we're dealing with now.
Yes.
That sounds messy.
It is, and that's what Mark Smith is talking about in this article. He's
Huh.
pointing out these mistakes that the courts are making.
So give us the lowdown.
Okay.
What are some of these mistakes?
So one of the biggest sticking points is this thing called the in common use test.
Okay.
And basically, Heller established this idea that if a weapon is commonly used by law-abiding citizens for lawful purposes, then it's protected under the Second Amendment. You can't ban it.
Sounds straightforward enough.
Right, but there's more to it.
I knew it.
This in common use test applies regardless of when a weapon was invented.
So something could be perfectly legal today, even if it was something so advanced the Founding Fathers couldn't even dream of it.
Yes. And that's where we get into some of the lower courts are pushing back.
Yeah.
And they're saying, well, this modern weapon is just too dangerous.
Right.
It can't possibly be protected.
Yeah.
But Smith argues they're missing the point.
Okay.
Bruin isn't about judging the dangerousness of a weapon. It's about judging its common use.
So it's not about is it dangerous? It's about is it in common use?
Exactly. And it raises this really interesting question of how do you apply a centuries-old document to a world with constantly evolving technology?
It's like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah.
And speaking of things that don't quite fit, let's talk about those historical analogies.
Okay.
So Smith argues that courts are struggling to find the appropriate comparisons between modern gun laws and historical ones.
Yes, because Bruin demands not just any historical comparison.
Right.
But a comparison that's relevant in terms of how and why the law restricted gun ownership.
Okay, so give us an example.
All right.
What kind of situations are causing these headaches for the courts?
Okay, so think about modern laws that ban handguns. Okay, so some have tried to compare these to laws from the founding era that regulated how people stored gunpowder in their homes.
Gunpowder.
Yeah.
Yeah. How is that a fair
And
comparison?
that's exactly what the Supreme Court said.
Okay.
The Supreme Court rejected that analogy
Oh.
because those old gunpowder laws were about fire safety. They
Okay.
weren't about preventing crime.
So the why didn't line up.
The why was totally different.
Gotcha.
It has to be a genuine historical parallel, not just some random law that kind of vaguely relates to guns.
Interesting.
And it can get even more nuanced than that.
Okay.
Smith gives another example where a modern law imposes like a lifetime ban on owning a gun if someone makes a threat.
A lifetime ban just for making a threat?
Yeah.
That seems extreme. It does. And so they tried to compare that to a historical law requiring a surety bond,
Okay.
basically like a financial guarantee that you'll behave.
Interesting.
But the Supreme Court wasn't buying it
Yeah.
because one law completely takes away someone's right to own a gun,
Right.
while the other simply requires financial insurance. It's
Yeah.
a huge difference in how they impact people's lives.
So we've got courts misinterpreting tests, getting tangled up in historical parallels.
Yeah.
But there has to be more to this.
There is.
What other mistakes is Smith pointing out?
Well, this is where it gets a little uncomfortable.
Oh.
Smith points out that some are actually trying to use racist and unconstitutional historical laws,
Wow.
like those that disarm specific racial groups,
correct?
To justify modern gun control.
That is scary.
It is.
Are courts actually entertaining these arguments?
No. Thankfully, courts are pushing back against using those types of laws as justification. But it's a reminder that just because something happened in the past doesn't mean it's a valid precedent for today.
Right.
So we have courts misinterpreting tests, getting tangled up in historical parallels, and even trying to use discriminatory laws as justification.
This is complicated.
It is. And keep in mind, we're just talking about how courts are interpreting Bruin,
right,
which itself is based on Heller.
Right.
So there's a lot of layers here.
A lot of layers.
And Smith dives into even more specific legal battles that are playing out right now.
This is why we deep dive.
Yeah.
To get to the bottom of these complicated issues.
Exactly. And believe me, there's plenty more layers to uncover.
I can't wait to hear what other legal rabbit holes we can jump into. But for now, we need to take a quick pause.
Okay.
Quick pause to catch our breath. So you were telling us about Smith diving into some specific legal battles.
Yeah.
Where do we go next on this journey through the Second Amendment?
Well, one area that's been pretty controversial is the Second Amendment rights of 18 to 20-year-olds.
Oh, yeah. That age group that's kind of stuck in between.
Right.
Adults for some things, not for others.
Exactly. And the Second Amendment itself doesn't actually mention an age limit.
Ah.
Unlike some other constitutional rights.
Okay, so how are courts handling this?
Yeah.
What are the arguments on each side?
So some people say historically, those under 21 didn't have full rights.
Okay.
But Smith kind of pushes back on that. Mm-hmm. He points out that back in the day, 16-year-olds were actually required to own guns for militia service.
Right.
And there weren't any age-based restrictions on how they got or used those guns.
So he's using history against them.
Exactly. It's like, if we're going to talk about historical precedent, let's really talk about historical precedent.
I like it. So we've got age limits causing some legal friction. What other hot-button issues does Smith unpack?
Another one is the concept of sensitive places where guns might be restricted.
Oh, this is a big one, right?
Yeah.
Guns in schools, government buildings, all of that.
Yeah, those are some examples, but the Supreme Court has expressed some real skepticism about just broadly defining any place as sensitive simply because people gather there. Like Smith brings up airports, for instance.
Yeah.
We restrict firearms in secure areas, but not in the general terminal area.
So it's more about defining the boundaries rather than just saying no guns allowed, period.
Right. And this leads to some really interesting questions.
Like what?
Well, think about government buildings.
Okay.
Historically, we've had armed security in those places, not blanket bans.
Mm.
So where do we draw the line?
It's tough, right? Trying to balance security with individual rights.
Exactly. And the answers aren't always clear cut.
Definitely not. Okay, so we've got age limits, sensitive places.
Mm.
What other legal gray areas are courts trying to figure out in the wake of Bruin?
Well, Smith also looks at licensing regulations.
Okay.
Specifically, the difference between shall issue and may issue licensing systems.
Okay, remind me, what's the distinction again?
Sure. So shall issue means if you meet the criteria, like passing a background check, the official has to give you a permit.
Okay.
But may issue systems give officials more leeway to deny permits, even if you meet all the requirements.
So even if you pass your background check, jump through all the hoops, the person at the desk can still say no.
Right.
It doesn't seem very fair in light of Bruin.
Right. And that's one of the concerns, that it goes against the idea that this is a fundamental right.
Yeah.
Not just a privilege.
It's almost like they're saying, we acknowledge your right, but we get to decide if you can actually use it.
And Bruin actually expressed concerns about those may issue systems.
Really?
The Supreme Court isn't a fan of giving officials that kind of subjective power.
So they want to limit that discretion.
Exactly. And Smith also points out that Bruin wasn't happy about licensing processes that were too expensive, took too long, or required you to prove some special need to own a gun.
Okay.
Beyond just wanting to protect yourself.
So just wanting to protect yourself should be enough.
Right. It's about making sure the right is accessible to everyone.
Not just those who can afford it or jump through a bunch of hoops. This all seems connected, right? From historical analogies to licensing regulations. It's all about defining the boundaries of the Second Amendment in today's world.
Absolutely. And that's what makes this so interesting. We have this new precedent with Bruin, but the implications are still unfolding.
Like Bruin threw a pebble in a pond, and we're still watching the ripples spread out.
That's a great analogy. And speaking of ripples, there's another area where Bruin is having a big impact.
Okay, lay it on me. What else is shaking up the legal landscape? So you were saying Bruin's having this ripple effect. What other areas are being impacted?
Well, one that's pretty interesting is gun and ammunition taxes.
Taxes?
Yeah.
I haven't thought about that much in this whole context.
It might seem like a different thing, but it really gets to the core of how far the government can go in regulating firearms without, you know, violating that fundamental right.
Right.
Bruin didn't just wipe out all gun laws.
Right.
It just set a new bar for how they have to be justified.
So are these taxes like a way to get around Bruin?
That's what courts are starting to figure out. Smith suggests that these tax cases could become a major battleground in the next couple of years.
Hmm. It's like those sin taxes we have on cigarettes and alcohol.
Yeah.
Trying to discourage something without totally banning it.
Exactly. And that's the argument that some governments are making.
Okay.
Saying that taxation is a totally legitimate way to regulate commerce.
Right.
And maybe even, you know, steer people away from owning guns.
But doesn't that unfairly impact people who can't afford to pay those higher taxes?
That's the argument from the other side.
Right.
Second Amendment advocates say that these taxes could essentially make it impossible for some of them to exercise their right.
It's like we're back to that same question of balance.
Exactly.
How do we balance individual rights with concerns about public safety?
Right.
Is using taxes to discourage gun ownership going too far?
It's a tough one, and these are questions that the courts are going to have to answer.
Right.
It's a tricky situation because if a tax is seen as basically a sneaky way to ban guns by making them unaffordable, then that brings up some serious constitutional questions.
So taxes are controversial too. Who knew?
Right.
It's interesting how something that seems kind of mundane can become such a big deal.
It really shows you how deeply rooted the Second Amendment is in, you know, American culture and history and now even economics.
This whole deep dive has been eye-opening.
Yeah.
Going from historical parallels to age limits,
sensitive
places.
Right.
Now we're talking about taxes. I had no idea the Second Amendment was so complicated.
Well, it just goes to show that there's always more to learn, even about topics we think we understand.
That's why we deep dive.
Exactly.
To really challenge our assumptions and explore new ideas and hopefully get a deeper understanding of these big issues that shape our world.
This whole conversation about Bruin really shows us that there's no easy answers.
Right.
You know, we have this new legal landscape and we're still trying to figure out what it all means.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack.
It's going to take time and careful consideration to navigate all of this.
What are your final takeaways from all of this? What should our listeners be thinking about?
I think the big takeaway is that this is an ongoing conversation. Bruin really shook things up.
Oh, yeah.
But the debate is far from over. We all have a role to play in shaping how the Second Amendment is interpreted and applied in the 21st century.
Well said.
We have to engage in thoughtful conversations, challenge our own assumptions, and stay informed. That's how we move forward.
That's the beauty of the deep dive, right?
Yeah.
It's not about telling anyone what to think.
Exactly.
It's about giving you the information and the tools
to
form your own opinions and maybe spark some interesting conversations along the way.
That's what we want.
So to all our listeners out there, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the Second Amendment. Keep those critical thinking caps on.
Yes.
And we'll see you next time.